Welcome everybody, Freilich and Chanukah, Happy Chanukah, Chanukah Sameach, Lichtiger Chanukah, whatever your preferred salutation. But welcome everybody, it's so great to have you and to be able to learn Torah together with you, just like I'm so privileged to learn Torah with your sons each and every day, which is, I have to share with you, is quite a daunting experience. To go from teaching high school to teaching college for a couple of years to teaching the greatest smicha talmidim in the world. So that's a little bit scary. Most of the guys know how to learn better than I do, but I've learned it once or twice before, so I'm able to have at least a little bit of a leg up to try to have what to offer. But I think it's just a very nice idea that the hanhala of the yeshiva had to learn together with the parents as well. I've been on my share of Zooms over the past however many months it's been already, 9 months. I know that sometimes it could be difficult to focus on a Zoom. I hear that from Talmidim all the time as well. So to the extent that anybody would like to speak up at all during the shiur, it doesn't have to be like a straight lecture. I'm more than happy to have a little bit of a give and take during the shiur. I chose a topic that's a little bit of a lighter kind of a topic, a more debatable kind of a topic. So maybe we'll have what to discuss. I was on one of these parent shiurim for Rav Shechter because my son is in Rav Shechter shiur, so I get to be a parent going into Rav Shechter's parents shiur, and he started his shiur by saying, "Hello, my name is Herschel Shechter. I've been teaching in the yeshiva for over 50 years." Like, Ki'ilu, no one knew who he was. And he started, describing what they do in shiur, like a meet your teacher's night. We try to cover a lot of ground, and he started going through. So, my name is Aryeh Leibowitz. I've been teaching in the yeshiva for 1.5 years, almost, and that's it. So, essentially, what I try to do in shiur is keep my head above water and try to keep up with the guys. That's my entire goal. And to try to expose them a little bit to some of the halacha lemaisa shailas that they might get, on the particular area of limud that we're doing. But tonight I want to talk a little bit about a Chanukah issue that's lahalacha, but I would say lahalacha v'lo lemaisa. Not something that's really likely to come up, nor likely for anyone to ever really think of doing. But I thought was intriguing. I was listening to a shiur from Rabbi Yisrael Reisman, who is a Rosh Yeshiva in Torah Vedas, and he was saying in his shiur that he saw in the Ha'aros to Maseches Shabbos from Rav Yashiv Zichrono Livracha that somebody asked Rav Yashiv if, let's say, the following thing happens. There is a Gemara Maseches Shabbos that tells us that Machlokas Kavsa Zakukla or Kavsa Ein Zakukla. What if the Neros Chanukah go out? Do you have to relight them? You light Neros Chanukah, a wind comes and blows them out 5 minutes later. Are you obligated to relight them? Can you say, no, I did my job. Hadlakos a mitzvah. I fulfilled my mitzvah of lighting Neros Chanukah. So we paskin Kavsa Ein Zakukla, that if they go out, it's not your problem. You don't have to relight the Neros Chanukah. It's a shaila. What about if when you lit on Erev Shabbos? So you light an Erev Shabbos, you're obviously lighting very early. And what if they go out before Shabbos even begins? Do we still say Kafsa Ein Zakukla? Or maybe that's different. Okay, interesting question. But the Meikred Din Wipaskin, if your Neros go out, you've already done your mitzvah, and therefore Ein Zakukla. So they report in the Ha'aros to Masecha Shabbos, which is the write-ups of Rav Yashiv Chidushei Torah on the Masechta. Rav Yashiv Zichrono Livracha never really wrote to be published. He never wrote anything to be published. He would write, but never with the intent of publishing anything. In fact, in the Rav Yashiv biography, it says that one day they came in and someone said to Rav Yashiv, "Mazel tov, you must be so happy." And he said, "Why? What happened?" And he figured he must have had another great grandchild or something, because he had over 100 descendants. So what happened? So I think he had over 1,000 descendants or something crazy like that when he died. He had a great, great, great grandchild. He commented about that he wasn't sure if he was Pasul or Kashul or Edus about him, because they're so distantly related, so many generations apart. But they said to him, Malzev, he said, why? What happened? So they said, oh, you published your tshuvos. The Rav Yashiv's tshuvos went out. I have them on the shelf behind me. Kovitz tshuvos. So he said, what? He never published anything. Someone else had collected his tshuvos. They didn't ask him for permission because they knew he would never give permission. And they just published his tshuvos without his. He wasn't much into writing his Chidushei Torah. Yet there were people that took notes. So he used to give a shir to Balabatim. He was just, you could, anyone around in Meir Sharim could just walk in and attend his Gemara Shir that he would give, and you can hear his Shir, and there were people that took notes, and they published. I think Rav Efrati is the one who published the notes from his Gemara Shirim, and those are called the Ha'aros. And the Ha'aros to Masecha Shabbos, they report that somebody asked Rav Eliashiv, what if you don't have Ner Chanukah? You don't have oil, you don't have wicks, you just don't have what you need for Ner Chanukah. But your friend does. And he already lit the menorah, and now it's 10 minutes later, and he's got enough oil for you to light also. Are you allowed to blow out his candles and just light it for yourself and say the bracha and light Neros Chanukah? After all, you're not taking away his mitzvah. The halacha is kavsa ein zakukla. That even though when you light Neros Chanukah, you have to make sure that you have enough oil to last for ad shetich l'regel menashuk, which let's assume for now means about a half hour. So you have to have about a half hour's worth of oil in the menorah. The guy did. He lit his menorah. He had a half hour's worth of oil. And the halacha is, if a wind were to blow it out, he does not have to relight it. Right? So can you just go blow it out and be mekayim the mitzvah yourself and light the Neros Chanukah yourself? So it goes against every fiber in your being to say, like, how could that possibly be allowed, right? That there's no way that could be allowed. But that was the Shaila of the Asher of Eliashiv. And in the Ha'aros, the Masecha Shabbos, the response that Rav Eliashiv gives is that such a shayla is amaratzus, that you have to be an amaretz to ask such a shayla. That's it. No explanation. He just called the guy an amaretz. So Rabbi Reisman Shlita was reading this and was commenting, and he said, so call me an amaretz, because I don't understand what the problem is. Meaning Rav Eliashiv was obviously saying that you're not allowed to do it. But I'm not sure from a technical perspective, what's the issue? Why aren't you allowed to do it? Technically, strictly speaking, what would be the issue? You know, it's interesting. It reminds me a little bit of a comment that Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach has in the back of the Sefer Halicha Shlomo and Tefillah. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach has an interesting approach to the status of a sleeping person. Rav Shlomo Zalman suggests that while a person is sleeping, he has no obligation in mitzvos. He's totally pater from mitzvos, including Kriya Shema, Tefillah, meaning if a parent has a teenage son, and the teenage son has read this essay from Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, and the parent wants to wake up the kid for davening, the kid could say, no, you don't. I have no chiyuv. While I'm sleeping, I have no chiyuv. Only people who are awake are obligated in mitzvos. People who are sleeping have no obligation in mitzvos. So Rav Shlomo Zalman thought that a sleeping person has a din of a shota. A shota is part of mitzvos. And that includes both mitzvos haseh and mitzvos lo haseh, he thought. It's interesting, and therefore he suggests, let's say there's only room in the sukkah for one person to sleep. There's only room for one kat in the sukkah. So he suggests, maybe what you could do is, you could be mevater, tell your friend, you take it, it's okay, you take the cot. Just make sure the cot has wheels on it, right? So he'll go, he'll take the cot, and as soon as he falls asleep, just roll him right out of the sukkah back into the house. He's sleeping, now he's part of a mitzvah. His obligation is to go to sleep in the sukkah, but just roll him right out of the sukkah, you go in, and you'll sleep in the sukkah after that. So Rav Shlomo Zalman thinks that, strictly speaking, nothing wrong with that, because he's being mekayim his mitzvah, he did his mitzvah, while he's sleeping, he has no mitzvah. It reminds me a little bit of that. Know that you're going to go and blow out his candles. Oh, he did his mitzvah. The hadlaka is his mitzvah. He doesn't need to do anything more. It's also, you know, this idea of kafsa ein zakukla is a fascinating concept. It's a major sugya in Shas, really, a major sugya in Masecha Shabbos, as to why that would be, that kafsa ein zakukla, and do we really paskin kafsa ein zakukla? So what ruins a lot of this is that the Rama writes in Shulchan Aruch that even though kafsa ein zakukla, we recommend that you relight anyway. Ein zakukla just means you don't say a bracha when you relight. But if your candles go out, you should really relight them anyhow. There's a beautiful story in Chashukei Chemed, on Chanukah, Chashukei Chemed is Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein, Rav Eliyashiv's son-in-law, wrote a number of svarim called Chashukei Chemed. They have these kinds of shilas, you know, these funny kinds of unusual shilas. In fact, when I asked a friend of mine what his thoughts were on this shila, he said, "I'm sure Rav Zilberstein has in Chashukei Chemed. Just look and see what Rav Zilberstein writes in Chashukei Chemed." So I did look. He does not have this this shila, but he has the following in Chashukei Chemed. He told a Maisa, a story that with the Tolna Rebbe. I'm not sure which Tolna Rebbe, but he said the Tolna Rebbe was doing Hachanos for Ner Chanukah on the first night of Chanukah, which he writes happens to be the Tolna Rebbe's yard site. And but this was obviously before he died. He was doing Hachanos for Ner Chanukah, and he was Hidlikas haMenorah b'dechilu v'rechimu b'slavos. He lit the menorah with this intense concentration and energy and focus, and it was like a big avoda, you know, by Hasidim when they do particular mitzvos. It's not just a maisa mitzvah. In our yeshiva, we talk about a maisa mitzvah. By the Hasidim, it's an avoda, it's a hislavus, it's a whole production. It's some. So he did this whole, with all these kavanos and everything. And then right after he lit, a small child ran by, knocked over the candle, and it was out. The candle was extinguished. And the Hasidim were all stunned. Oh no, what do we do now? What's going to be? So the Tolna Rebbe picks up the little boy, he gives him a big hug, and he says, "Bini Yekiri, hineni makir lecha toval shezichisi osi achshav lekayim bepam harishona es halacha kavsa ein zakukla. You've given me the first opportunity in my life to ever fulfill kavsa ein zakukla. That if the candle goes out, that you don't have to relight it. It's the sugya and shas, and the Gemara talks about it, and now I was able to fulfill the mitzvah, to fulfill that that halacha." Okay, so that's a very Hasidic perspective. But the question is, why is it amaratzos? Meaning, what's wrong? What's wrong with relighting it? So the truth is, even the circumstance is difficult to understand. What would ever be a situation where someone else lit a menorah and you have not yet fulfilled the mitzvah and yet will fulfill the mitzvah by lighting that same menorah in that same spot? Right, so certainly to take the guy's menorah away in some other spot, that you're for sure not allowed to do. So to light that menorah in that same spot will be your mitzvah, but you haven't yet fulfilled the mitzvah. You know, normally the halacha is meikar adin nerish ubeisa, the whole mitzvah of Ner Chanukah, one candle for everybody. So if you have you could have 10 children at home and still just one candle for everybody. So what does it mean? He hasn't been yotzei the mitzvah. He has been yotzei the mitzvah. There's a ner that's lit. Why would he ever have to blow it out in order to be yotzei the mitzvah? So what exactly is the situation? So if the second guy is one of the Bnei Abayis, it seems to be clear on Meratzos, because his entire lighting is only Middin Mahadrin, that people can then tell how many Bnei Abayis there are. But that's the whole point of the Mahadrin, is that people should be able to see how many Bnei Abayis there are. But by definition, if you're blowing out his candle and you're lighting it instead, no one's going to be able to tell how many Bnei Abayis there are. It's not going to change anything. It's not even a fulfillment of the Mahadrin. If you have to blow out the other guy's candles, no one's going to see how many Bnei Abayis. It's troubling because we do sometimes light late at night after the candles of the other family members have been extinguished, and that's an interesting shaila, why that's a fulfillment of the Mahadran. Meaning, are we assuming that people are going to drive by your house a few times and they're going to see different menorahs lit? So that's an interesting question, why that would be a fulfillment of the Mahadran. It could be that the fulfillment of the Mahadran is that even if people can't tell how many Bnei Abayis there are. You know, there's a question in Poskim, Rabbi Akiva Eiger discusses, why is it that when the second person to light in your house, why is that person allowed to recite a bracha in Ner Chanukah? The first person is doing a mitzvah. Second person, the mitzvah is already done. All they're doing is a hidur, but the mitzvah is already over. Why are they allowed to recite a bracha? Shouldn't that be a bracha levatala? So some of the poskim say it must be that they're having in mind when the neros are being lit the first time that they don't want to be yotzei the mitzvah with the first lighting. And if they had in mind that they don't want to be yotzei the mitzvah, so then the second time when they light, they'll be yotzei the mitzvah. That's a possibility. So maybe even if people cannot tell. Now, Rav Eliyashiv was asked about getting permission from the owner of the menorah before blowing it out. L'chora, that's also amaratzos. Meaning, if that's the case, I understand why Rav Eliyashiv said it's amaratzos. Meaning, he's not suggesting that a fellow's going to go and blow out someone else's candle just like that. He's going to ask permission first. Well, why is it that's amaratzos? Because if you ask permission and the owner of those neros says, "Sure, blow them out, no problem," Well, what's he telling you? He's making you his shliach, essentially, to blow them out. The Mishabura writes in Siman Tov Reish Ayin Beis in the Shaar HaTzion that if you're mechabe b'mezid, then kafsa zakukla. If you blow out the candles on purpose, then you do have to relight them. Mechabe b'mezid doesn't necessarily mean that I have to be the one to blow them out. Mechabe b'mezid could just be that I arranged for them to be blown out, meaning that I purposely made sure that they were blown out. And then you would have to relight it. According to the Ber Heitav quotes the Tshuvas Ginos V'Radim, you would even have to relight it with a bracha. The Mishnah Berurah and the Prima Gadim say, no, you wouldn't say a bracha. You wouldn't say a bracha when you relight it, because Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky explains, Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky has a wonderful sefer, a wonderful series of svarim that he didn't write personally, but a Talmud of his wrote of his Piskei Halacha called what's it called? Kovetz Halachos, I think it's called, something creative like that. It's like the name of my shul is Beis HaKnesses of North Woodmere. People say, oh, it's so creative. So Kovetz Halachos is the name of the. The name of the Sefer. There's a fellow, fine young Talmud Chacham of Daniel Kleinman, who must have spent a lot of time with Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky, because he has every little psak from Rav Shmuel on Shabbos and all the Moadim, and you know he did a really fantastic job. So in that Sefer Kovetz Halachos, he quotes from Rav Shmuel Shlita that really when you lit the candles the first time, you yotze the mitzvah at the moment of hadlaka. That mitzvah doesn't go away even if later you decided to be a rasha and blow them out. I mean, if you decided that you're going to be mazed, blow them out, or arrange to blow them out, it doesn't rob you l'mafreya of the mitzvah. It doesn't retroactively take away your mitzvah. Similarly, Rav Moshe Feinstein in his Dibros Moshe in Masechta Shabbos, Simen Chavav Ha'arachav, understands that if kafsa b'mezid, you were yotze, but jazakla, like you would for any other mitzvah, meaning you still have to do a mitzvah, meaning you were yotze, but you still have a chiyuv in the mitzvah. So kafsa, yes, you did a mitzvah, but zakukla, you haven't pattered your mitzvah. You know, mashal l'madavadome, it's like I remember when I was in high school, or my early admissions here in YU, so it's technically not high school, I guess, but a high school age, I was in Rav Baruch Simon's shir, and we were learning Maseches Bava Basra. And I remember we got to a Tosfos. It must have been a legal holiday or something. We weren't in yeshiva that day. But my chavrusa lived in the Five Towns. I lived in the Five Towns. So we got together in the yeshiva for Rockaway to learn together, because we had no yeshiva that day. So what else are you going to do on an off day, right? So my chavrusa was a pretty frum kid. So he dragged me along to learn. So we went to learn together. And we were learning a Tosfos about Pru Ravu, about the mitzvah of Pru Ravu. Long Tosfos Maseches Bava Basra, based on the Mishnah Maseches Edios. Not going to get into the details now. The whole sugi appears in Maseches Gittin as well. And one of the things that became apparent when we were learning, as is apparent to anyone who's ever studied the mitzvah of Pru Ravu, is that the mitzvah of Pru Ravu is to have a son and a daughter. Right, to that you're not patur from Puravu until you have a son and a daughter. That's the mitzvah of Puravu. It's machlokas tanoim, what one needs for Puravu, whether you need a son and a daughter or two sons is enough for the mitzvah of Puravu. We paskin a son and a daughter. So I remember we went over to one of the rebbeim in the yeshiva and we said, I don't understand. A couple has many, many children. They try very hard and they have all these children, but they're all the same gender. Whatever it is, they have eight boys, they have eight girls. You know, they're not mekayim the mitzvah of Puravu. So I remember the Rebbe said to us that, no, of course, each child that they have is a kiyum mitzvah. They're just not patur from the mitzvah until there's a son and a daughter. Meaning the patur only comes. You just don't. That's when you don't have to have any more once you have a son and a daughter. That's what Reiner of Shechter often points out, that there are other kiyumim in having more children as well. There's a midas chasidus of bebokas rosacha lerav al tanach yedecha, to have children after you have one son and daughter, but you're only patur once it's a son and a daughter. So a similar idea that Ramesha has in Dibros Moshe, that kafsa b'mezid zakukla means that if you blow it out b'mezid, you did a mitzvah. But now you still have a chiyuv in the mitzvah. Even though you did the mitzvah, you have a further chiyuv in the mitzvah. You're just not patur from the mitzvah. You have to light again. That's how Rav Moshe writes in Dibros Moshe. They say that Rav David Feinstein, Zichron Levracha, used to say that if you know, everyone reads the Igros Moshe, people don't learn Dibros Moshe so much. He said, if you ever find a contradiction between the Igros Moshe and the Dibros Moshe, the more authoritative of the two Svarim is the Dibros Moshe. The Dibros Moshe is Rav Moshe's Gemara Shiurim. They're very, very long, very, very hard, and that's why no one reads them. I remember Rav Baruch Simon told us when we were in that early admissions shiur, he said, Guys, if you ever have like 10 to 12 hours on a Sunday to really just break your head straight for 10 to 12 hours, try to go through one piece in the Dibros Moshe. Like that would be a good use of 10 to 12 hours, and that's what it would take to go through a single piece in the Dibros Moshe. This piece I'm quoting is a little Ha'ara. He has these little notes also. So Rav David said that when Rav Moshe wrote the Dibros Moshe, he was in the sugya, like he was holding on that topic. Igros Moshe, the questioner set the agenda. It's not the topics that Rav Moshe was learning at the time. It's just the questions that he got, so he responded to those questions. That's where David thought that it's much more authoritative. The Dibros Moshe is much more authoritative because his head was much more in the sugya. I heard a very similar thing from Rav Asher Weiss. Rav Asher Weiss told me that his svarim on Shas, his svarim on the Masechtas, are much stronger than his tshuvas. He said because I was in the sugya. The tshuvas are just, you know, people ask me questions, so I have to answer the questions to the best of my recollection. But I'm not like really in it. That's not what. Anyway, so that's so. What exactly is the case over here that would even be a shaila? So again, we have two possibilities. We'll go backwards. Possibility number one, let's say, is you ask permission. That's a non-starter. Asking permission, the guy is not allowed to give you permission because that's kavsa b'mezid. Possibility number two is, no, you didn't ask permission, but you're a ben abayis. You live in the same house as him. Well, if you're a ben abayis, then that's also a non-starter. If you're a ben abayis, you're already yotze the mitzvah. You don't need to you don't need to light again. You're not missing out on anything. Possibility number three, you're not a ben abayis. You're an achsanai. You're a guest in someone's house. Quite a guest, right? You're a guest in someone's house. The host lights the menorah. You wait till he goes back into the kitchen or something. You blow it out and you relight it yourself, right? So you're mekayim the mitzvah that way. So, but as a guest, you do have a separate chiyuv. You're not really a ben abayis. So the Gemara tells us that a guest in someone's house should be mishtatif papriti. The Gemara tells us that Rabbi Zeira used to do that when he was a bacher and he'd stayed at someone's house for Hanukkah. He would pay a couple of dollars. And the classic understanding of that, the way the Mishnah Berurah writes, is that it means that you're supposed to own some of the oil. So you should buy some of the oil. So you pay a couple of pennies or a couple of dollars to purchase your share in the oil of the ben abayis. And for that reason, Rav Adi Yosef and some of the other poskim say, you don't have to actually pay money. You can make another kinyan on the oil. Just do a kinyan hagbah, lift up the oil, and have in mind that you're being kona some of that oil. And that would work also, he suggests. That would possibly work as well. Rav Soloveitchik did not think that that was true. Rav Soloveitchik thought that you're not yotze by just making a kinyan on the oil. That the Gemara specifically said mishtatev papriti, and Rav Asher Weiss said the same thing. That the Gemara specifically said to give some money. That dafka when you give money, it makes you one of the bnei abayis. That's the mechanism that's at work. So that's why Talmidim Rav Soloveitchik or dafka makbid when they're somewhere, you know, whenever you go away for Shabbos Chanukah or for Chanukah, they'll always say, "Would you like to light your own menorah?" You know, we had in our family, I had four boys that became bar mitzvah, Baruch Hashem. So we have a lot of menorahs. You know, people buy bar mitzvah presents, so we have lots and lots of menorahs. And you know, they all went to preschool, so we have lots and lots of menorahs. The preschool ones are usually a fire hazard, but you know, we have lots of menorahs. So would you like to light your own menorah? So what's the right answer? So many people would say, yeah, even better than being mishtatev pruti, I'll light my own. No, but says Rav Soloveitchik, that doesn't work because then you're not a ben abayis. It's only when you're mishtatev pruti that you become a ben abayis that you could participate in lighting of the menorah. So if you're a guest, then you should have been paying a couple of dollars. You should not be blowing out his candles. The only situation I could think of where this shaila is a shaila is in the old days where there used to be such a din of lighting al Pesach HaChatzer. The proper makom for hadlaka was not inside the house. Proper makom for hadlaka was not even by the front door of your house. Proper makom for hadlaka, they used to have the neighborhood set up where there were multiple houses that shared a chatzer, and the chatzer is where the kids would play, the chatzer is where they would do their laundry, where they would do whatever, you know, in the Middle East, you know, where the weather is pretty nice. So they had, they made use of the chatzer to do whatever they needed to do, and that was a shared area. And then, where they would light the Neros Chanukah was al Pesach HaChatzer. That's why the Chasam Sofer suggests that the minhag developed that women used to not light Neros Chanukah. If you need for every ben abayis, and women are certainly chayiv in Neros Chanukah, why would there be yotze with the men lighting? The women should be lighting also. So the Chasam Sofer suggests, because if all the different batim in the chatzar come out with their entire families all at the same time, it would turn into a big social scene. We have tashlich on Rosh Hashanah. We don't need tashlich again on Chanukah. So we try to avoid the social scene. So that's what he suggests. That's what he says. Kol kvud bas melech pnima. Obviously, if you're lighting inside, then you don't have that concern at all. But that's what they used to do. So how could it be that I have not yet been yotzei my neros Chanukah, and I can be yotzei by lighting candles in the exact spot where there were already neros Chanukah lit? That's if my neighbor lit and I didn't light. But we're both supposed to light in the same place. We're both supposed to light by the Pesach HaChatzer. So he already lit. I didn't. He's already back inside. So let me quickly blow out his candles. I'll light. He'll never know. He'll never know. It won't, you know, what he doesn't know can't hurt him. So is that permissible? That was the Shaila that Rav Yisrael Reisman suggested. Maybe is a good Shaila. That what's the problem? So I think the problem is pretty pashut. There's an issur in the Torah that you're not allowed to steal. So it seems that that would be stealing his oil. Meaning what you're essentially doing is you're taking the oil away from him and you're using the oil for yourself. You want to say, no, he was mafkir the oil because he already lit it with the plan that it would burn, with the plan that it would burn for him. And it seems that there is a greater kiyum mitzvah. The longer the neros burn, the greater the kiyum mitzvah. That seems to be clear in the Gemara. The Gemara talks about what's better, to use a candle that will last longer or a candle that will provide higher quality light. And the Gemara says, better to have one that will give higher quality light. Mashach nehura tfei. So even though we conclude that a clearer light is better than lasting longer, the Gemara never rejects the idea that it's an advantage to last longer. That if it's so all the oil that you have in your menorah, even if you're mekayim mitzvah without it, as it's all the oil that you have, you want it to be used for your lighting because that is a kiyum mitzvah. It's also important, like we mentioned before, to point out that the Rama implies that even if it goes up a shogeg, you should relight it. It's just not with a bracha. And it's mefurish in the Magen Avram that way. So the person who lit would definitely not be mevater on someone else putting it out, because that's gonna be taking away his mitzvah. There is a sugya in Baba Kama Daf Tzadi Aleph, if someone steals a mitzvah. You know, Shulchan Aruch talks about this in Chosh Mishpah Simshin Pei Beis. If someone steals a mitzvah from you, that he owes you money. You're not allowed to steal a mitzvah. You have to pay Asar Zehuvim if you steal a mitzvah. There's a discussion. What if a man lights Neros Shabbos? Does he owe his wife money? Because Neros Shabbos is traditionally a mitzvah that's done by women. Even though, really, there, you know, from a strict halachic perspective, it doesn't seem that there's a really great reason for that. Meaning a man is also chayiv in Neros Shabbos. So why are the women the ones that that do the Neiru Shabbos? Okay, but traditionally that's always been accepted, that the women are the ones that do the Neiru Shabbos. Or let's say Hafrashas Challah, right? Hafrashas Challah, men also has to do Hafrashas Challah. You know, if a man bakes, yeah, of course he has to do Hafrashas Challah. And yet, typically that's assumed to be that one of the mitzvos that a woman does. I once got a call on, like, this time of night, on a Thursday night. It was like 8:45 on a Thursday night, that someone called me that he was baking challahs in his bakery in Eretz Yisrael for Shabbos, and he was mafresh challah in Eretz Yisrael, and he can't find the piece that he was mafresh. He thinks he mixed it in back together with the rest of the dough. And he's got a bakery, and he's baking all these challahs for Shabbos. What do I do now? So my first question was, you're in Israel. There are rabbis in Israel, right? Why do you have to call a rabbi in North Woodmere? He said, yeah, but it's 4 in the morning in Israel. I'm not going to wake anybody up at 4 in the morning. So the right answer was that he had to be shoel on his hafrasha. He had to go get a beis din together and do like a hataras nedarim kind of thing, to be shoel on the hafrasha and then redo the hafrasha. So he anyway had to wake up 3 rabbis to get the beis din together to be shoel on the hafrasha in order to be able to run his bakery. But hafrasha. So a woman typically does it, and therefore, if a man does it, the Chida writes in Machzik Bracha, in the name of Rabbi Yaakov Emden, in Lechem Shemayim, that if the husband goes and is mafresh challah, he has to pay his wife. And the same is true by Adlachas Aner L'chara. The Chida disagrees with it, and he says, even though an Isha is Kodemes, because it's more her mitzvah, but the man, it's the man's mitzvah also. He's not taking away a mitzvah that Dafka belongs to her, right? It's a discussion by Bris Mila. If a father has a son, and it's the father's mitzvah to do the Bris, and someone else else comes in and just does the bris, so that could be that he's chotef the mitzvah, that he owes the father the money for doing the bris. It's also really not a nice thing to do. You don't know if the father trusts you that you're going to go and do the bris. There's also a fascinating discussion that Tzvika Reisman has in one of his Svarim, Ratzke Tzvi, whether Ner Chanukah needs to be lachem, whether you need to be the one that owns your Ner Chanukah, which is a little bit of an odd thing to say. Why would it what has to be lachem? The Gemara in Kiddushin talks about certain mitzvahs have to be lachem. Ariso Sechem, for challah, for Afreshes challah, needs to be your dough, right? Or most famously, Lekachtem Lachem B'yom Arishon, on the first day of Sukkot, Dalin Minim Lachem. It's got to be Lachem, it's got to be yours. At a Bar Lulav, you're not Yotzei the Mitzvah. So why would, Ner Chanukah, I promise you, I can guarantee you, there is no Pasuk in the Torah that tells you that Ner Chanukah has to be Lachem. Obviously, Ner Chanukah is a mitzvah d'rabanan. There's no pasuk in the Torah that tells you anything about Ner Chanukah. Okay, there are remazim all over these parshios about Ner Chanukah, Tvoah, Tavach, V'achein, and the different remazim. But there's no pasuk in the Torah that has to be lechem. So where does it go? Where would the suggestion even come from? So it's fascinating for those Dafyomi people out there. We had a Gemara recently in Maseches Pesachim on Daf Zayin. The Gemara talks about which mitzvos do you say a bracha with the nusach of al, and which mitzvos do you say a bracha with the nusach of le, right? Is it le hadlik ner or al hadlakas ner? How do I know when a mitzvah gets an al and when a mitzvah gets a le? So the Gemara has one suggestion about lahaba or l'sha'avar, but the Rishonim try to fill in the gaps a little bit, and the Ran writes that any mitzvah that you have to do yourself, that's a mitzvah shebeguf, tefillin, sukkah, tzitz, I can't send someone else to do it. I have to do that myself. So those get a lit. I can't decide to sleep late and say, I'll have someone else put on tefillin for me. No, I got to do that myself. But any mitzvah that you could send a shaliach for, be your chametz, mila, pidyon ben, you could send someone else to do that, to be the moel for your child. Even to be poda your child, pidyon ben, you could send a shaliach to do those things. Those all get an al. But then he asks, but what about Ner Chanukah? Ner Chanukah, it's lahadlik ner, shel Chanukah, or Chanukah, different, but lehadlik, can't I send a shliach to do Ner Chanukah for me? So the Ran writes that since you have to be mishtativ papriti, you have to pay for it, so even though you don't have to be the one that does the maisa mitzvah, you need direct involvement in the mitzvah. Meaning you need the oil to belong to you. And it's therefore like a mitzvah shebegufo. So says Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank that this Ran is telling us that apparently there's a din of lachem by Ner Chanukah. Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank said, yeah, but why? Where would that come from, the din of lachem? So Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank suggests maybe it's because when we do the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah, it's supposed to mimic the Neiros in the Beis HaMikdash. And meaning when they found that that one flask of oil, right? So who owned that one flask of oil? It was owned by all of Klal Yisrael. It belonged to all of us. It was bought with Mamun HaTzibur. So if it belonged to all of us, maybe to fulfill the mitzvah, you need to use oil that belongs to you, because that's the best way to mimic the mitzvah in the menorah Shebemikdash. That's quite a chiddush, but if it has to be lachem, l'chora, it's not that. Right, meaning it's hard to say if you blow out someone else's candles that you're in fulfillment of the lachem. What's the only svara to say that it would work? So the svara to say that this would be helpful to blow out someone else's candle is another sugya in the beginning of Maseches Pesachim. The Gemara tells us in the beginning of Maseches Pesachim that if rented a house b'cheskaso baduk, that it was supposed to have bedikas chametz done. You're going to Florida for Pesach, you want to show up on Erev Pesach, it's supposed to already have bedikas chametz, it's supposed to be done, and you show up on Erev Pesach, and there's like a loaf of bread out on the table, right, to this apartment that you rented. Clearly it was not baduk. And you're in a place where the practice is that people don't do their own bedikas chametz, they hire others to do bedikas chametz. I had a shaila just recently. This was a little bit of a crazy one. A family in my shul were both very sick with corona on Erev Pesach. Both very, very ill. I mean, Baruch Hashem, we have a lot of doctors in the neighborhood who at the time said, do not go to a hospital, and they pretty much made a makeshift hospital in their house, and were taking care of them 24/7, and mamish saved their lives. And so because it was Erev Pesach, and they couldn't clean their house, and they had young children, so they hired a company, the fellow sister hired a company to come in, a firm company to come in and do a cleaning, to clean for Pesach. So the company came in. They had a team of people that came in. They were there for like 4 hours, and they cleaned for Pesach. And they said, "How much do I owe you? Don't worry, we'll send you a bill." Okay? They whatever decontaminated or what do you call it? I don't know. They sprayed something or whatever to in addition, and they didn't hear from this cleaning company. They didn't even think about it. They were so sick they hadn't even thought about it, and they just got a bill last week for $5,500. So they called them. I said, "This must be some sort of mistake. $5,500. What are you talking about?" Well, they said, "Well, $4,000 for the cleaning and then $1,500 for the disinfecting." He said, "Look, I was sick, but I remember what the disinfecting was. It was one guy walking around with a spritz for like 5 minutes. Like that was the disinfecting." He said, "Is it like it, do I have to pay that? I never asked for a price when they first came." Okay, whatever the story is with that Shaila. But there are some places where the minhag is, the Gemara says, that you would hire someone for money to clean your house. So now, can I come to the owner of this apartment that I'm renting in Florida and say, "I'm backing out of this agreement. I'm not paying for this. The agreement was that you were supposed to do bedikah. You didn't, and now I'm going to have to pay for bedikah? That's a mekachtos. I'm backing out." So the Gemara says you can't back out because we assume that you're just using that as a pretext. You would never really want to back out just because now you have to pay for bedikas chametz. Gemara says why? Because nichalei le'inish loved mitzvah b'mamone. We have a chazaka that a person wants to spend his money on mitzvos, and therefore he's perfectly happy, he's perfectly comfortable spending his money on mitzvos, and it would never be a reason to back out of an agreement just because you have to spend your money on mitzvos. Ooh, so if we have such a chazaka that people are happy to spend their money on mitzvos, you're allowed to la'halacha and shulchan aruch v'paskin. You're allowed to borrow things without permission from people if it's for a mitzvah. If you go to shul and there's the Shulchan Aruch says, and you don't have a talis and tefillin, but there's someone else's talis and tefillin there, and they're not davening at that minyan, Shulchan Aruch paskins, you can use it without permission. You can use it because you can assume that the person will be more than happy to have a mitzvah done with his money. On the other hand, Shulchan Aruch writes, a sefer you're not allowed to borrow without permission because people are very particular about their svarim. So that's what the Aruch HaShulchan says, that nowadays it's the exact opposite. Nowadays, no one cares that much about no one's so particular about their Svarim, or most people are not so particular about their Svarim. Now that the printing press has been invented, you know, it's much easier, they're not so expensive, and you know, they're made high quality, you're unlikely to rip it when you borrow it. But people are very particular about their talis and tefillin. They don't want, you know, you put it on your greasy head, you put my tefillin, you know, people get very uneasy about these things. So it could be that the chazaka changed. But for certain things, we have a chazaka, that nichol elinish of mitzvah money. That would be the svara over here, that it's nichol elinish, that the person is happy. However, it doesn't seem that's operative over here. Because can you really say that that's a chazaka at the cost of his own hider mitzvah, of his own greatest fulfillment of the mitzvah? It doesn't seem that you could apply such a chazaka unless you know about this person that he always gives up his own mitzvahs for other people to do the mitzvah. Whenever he finds a nice little neshuk, he gives it to somebody else and he takes the cheaper one or the I don't know, but it doesn't seem that you can rely on such a chazaka. And of course, you know, there's always when we talk about the fifth Shulchan Aruch. The fifth Shulchan Aruch, which is just, you know, does it pass the smell test? Is this something that that seems right? And the fifth Shulchan Aruch, this fails miserably, right? There's no way that you could, that's considered appropriate behavior for a Ben Torah to go and blow out someone else's candles and use them for yourself. So it seemed that Rav Eliyashiv was correct, that the Shaila is Amaratzus, but it was Amaratzus that gave us 40 minutes of Torah to discuss together. So we should all be zocha to always have our own neiros, and we should light up those neiros. The Gemara says that Misha Zor Biner, having the banim tamidei chachamim. So I suspect that everyone on the Zoom was at every point in your lives, you were all Zahir Biner. You were very careful about neiros because it worked. You were all zocha Baruch Hashem to banim tamidei chachamim who are becoming even greater tamidei chachamim each and every day as they learn Bahasmada Maruba. You should all have abundant nachas from them as I try to keep up with them. So everyone should have a Freilich and Chanukah, and thank you so much for joining this evening.
Shukav, Chanukah Sameach.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Chanukah Sameach.